Solitaire Rose Novelcast, All In, Part 11, The Final Chapters. Now we come to the end. This is the final portion of All In, the poker novel. It is extra long because I didn't want to split it up. I will talk more about what's coming next after we complete the novel. What you need to know. Johnny Finch has saved money his entire college career to become a poker star. However, at the first tournament he went to, taking his huge stack of cash, he lost it all on the first hand. He and his fiancée Dawn have gone back to Ravensport, Illinois to figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. As we start, Johnny has turned down ill-gotten gains from one of his roommates, Dawn has gotten a job in Minnesota, and they're both quite upset that they will not have enough money to move to take her job. Chapter 25. It was 3 days later that Johnny had $1,000 in his pocket and was knocking on a door of a farmhouse about 10 miles out of town. It was still on the river and seemed like a very secluded place. Johnny waited at the door and looked around. It was an older two-story farmhouse with a full basement that had been very well kept. It had white siding, a three-car garage that had been built out of cinder blocks and leftovers from building some other house at some point. Maybe more than one house, since the shingles on the roof were a couple of different colors. It was Bill who came to the door, the older man who had beat him in the last game he played. "I wondered if you were interested," he said when he opened the door. "Yeah," Johnny said, "I'm interested." Bill led him down to the basement, which reminded him of basements he and his friends had hung out in during high school. It was dimly lit with fluorescent bulbs, a couple of hanging lights near the poker table. It was a nice basement, but obviously old, with worn green felt and drink holders. There was a bar with glasses and bottles behind it, and bowls full of chips, pretzels, and other snacks on the bar itself. The rest of the basement was dark, and Johnny could make out the outlines of a pool table, some long-forgotten exercise equipment. At the table were two people Johnny recognized and two he didn't. Jason was there, and he nodded to him, as well as Butch, a tall guy with long hair and an easy smile, who looked like he should be hanging out at the gym instead of playing poker. He'd played Jason in the same game that he'd met Bill in, and he'd played against Butch quite a few times in the past. Butch was an incredibly lucky player who stayed in for almost every flop and hated folding his hand, but he would do it if he didn't catch on the flop. He was never up a lot, but he never seemed to walk away from the table a loser either, and he liked to play in order to be with the other guys playing. Bill waved him over to the bar, and Johnny handed him the cash, getting a large tray of chips. "We don't settle up until dawn at the earliest, so if you're up 2 hours and want to leave, tough shit." People at the table laughed, and Butch said, "Yeah, Bill, you're a wild man. I'd be scared of you if I didn't know your wife would give you seven kinds of shit if you're still here when she gets up for church." Bill grimaced, "Damn it, guys, I'm trying to set a mood." He's just thrilled to get a real-life poker tour player at the table. "He's been watching the Cincinnati Kid for the past week to get ready for this," Jason said. Johnny smiled and thought, "At least he has decent taste in movies." Bill walked over to the table and sat down. "You know Butch and Jason," he said, going around the table. "This is Matt," he indicated another older gentleman, but one who was rail-thin and had a full head of thick, shaggy gray hair and a closely trimmed goatee. "And the kid is Doug. He's been saving for a year to get in this game." Doug reminded him of himself a few years ago. He had a messy mop of brown hair and was wearing sunglasses, even though it was so dark in the basement it would be next to impossible for him to see what was going on. Johnny tried not to smirk at the kid when he said hello, watched as the kid nodded, trying to appear cool. Johnny sized up the table while Bill told him how the game would go. "We're playing Texas Hold'em all night, and the deal passes to the right. This isn't being played tournament style, but we will be raising the blinds and antes every hour just to keep it interesting. No credit, so if you're busted, you're busted. You go all in and lose, you're out, unless you want to take off and get more cash. Game's over at 8 in the morning. And the winner pays for the snacks and drinks," Jason said, smiling. "Damn right," Bill said. "Now I set a minimum table stake of $1,000. It's a serious game, but I don't want people to lose their houses or anything like that." Johnny nodded and thought about what he was here to do. This was his one chance to get the money so that Dawn could move and get her dream job. She knew he was playing for the money to do the move, and if she had any worries about it, she kept them to herself. Johnny, on the other hand, had a lot of worries about it. He'd written her to tell her he was doing it. He'd also written in the note that James had given him the money for them to move, but he just couldn't accept it. In the letter, he explained why he couldn't take that money. He'd decided he would try and get it using his paycheck and the money he got from Rob for rent that month to get the money for them to move. He also told her that he had to write it, because if he had to tell her in person, he'd lose his nerve. Now, sitting at the table, every penny he had in the world in front of him, he wondered for the millionth time if he was doing the right thing. While Bill was explaining how the night would go, all he could think was the last two games he played. Two kings. How much did it suck that his poison hand was two kings, the second strongest starting hand in Hold'em? "Shuffle up and deal," came the first thing he heard Doug say, and the other people at the table laughed. By the time the cards were dealt, the laughter had faded, and people were serious. As they played the first few hands, the antes were a buck and blinds were 5 and 10 bucks, which was a nice way to start the night so they could all get an idea of how the other people played. Johnny also did some math as he sized up everyone's stack. Doug had the minimum, Butch had a little more than him, as did Jason. Bill had a huge stack, probably twice as much as Johnny did, and Matt had a stack somewhere between Bill and Jason. After an hour, Johnny was able to get a good read on how each of them played. Jason and Bill played the same as they had in lower stakes games that he'd been in with them, and Butch was staying in for almost every flop and kept up the table's conversation. It wasn't to keep the other players off guard, but simply because he wanted to keep up the social aspect. He loved it when it came down to a two-player showdown on the river, even if he wasn't involved, and sounded almost like a TV announcer when he watched. Doug was tight, way too tight for the opening of a game, and Johnny had pegged him pretty quickly as someone who was scared of losing their money, which meant that he wouldn't take big risks and could be chased out of a pot pretty easily. Matt, on the other hand, was playing well. Almost too well for Johnny not to know who he was. Johnny had played in most of the poker games in town, from penny ante frat boy games to the big money games in the backs of bars where a night's profits could be gone in a single hand. He'd gotten good enough to make money in all of them. The poker community was pretty tight, and it was a rare thing that someone who was that good hadn't played against him at some point over the past 4 years. Johnny watched as he pushed Doug out of a few pots on hands where he couldn't have had the best hand, and he knew he was up against someone who knew what they were doing. He spent most of the second hour watching Matt try to pick up some tells, but he wasn't able to get any. He didn't change how he sat in his seat. He always looked at his cards the same way, and no matter what cards he had, if he came in, he always came in for 3 times the big blind on his opening bet, so it was impossible to tell what he had from the strength of his bet. He also folded his hands if he didn't win, making sure that no one at the table knew if he'd just barely missed winning or if he was trying a large bluff and just got called one too many times. After 2 hours of play, the money had started to move around the table a lot more than Johnny thought it would. Doug was down to about half his stack. Butch had lost a lot as well, but didn't seem to notice. Jason was up a bit, as was Bill, but the big winners at the table by far were Matt and Johnny. Johnny had brought his stack up to about half again what he'd started with. In other words, he was halfway there for his first goal, but he still had a long way to go for his main goal. He had decided that if he could get at least 2,000 that night, he might be able to send Dawn up to Minneapolis to take the job, and he would follow her there later. That was the first goal. The bad thing about the plan was he knew how long-distance relationships worked. Poorly at best. But he figured she'd given him the support and love he needed for his dream. The least he could do was do the same for her. His plan was to build his stack to 2,000, then sit on the money until he could make a safe move. He knew that he would need more money for both of them to move, and that was a stretch goal for the night. He didn't think he'd make it, and would have to play a few more games like this to afford moving for himself. He also knew that playing tight was not the way to get the big goal. He just didn't have the nerve to push it anymore. He'd had trouble sleeping the night before, simply because he kept flashing back to the tournament how he'd gotten cocky, how he'd pushed too hard, and had been crushed by someone who didn't know jack or shit about poker. This time he was going to play smart, because there wasn't a pipe dream of being a professional poker player at stake. It was Dawn's future, and the job she wanted more than anything. As they started the third hour play, Johnny put aside all thoughts of planning what to do with his winnings. Any time he thought about that was when he started losing. He shook it off, and concentrated on the game. "Blinds are now 20 and 40 bucks," Bill said, setting his watch again. It was Doug's deal, and he spun the cards out of his hand like a pro. Johnny was first act, looked down, saw 9 of 10 of hearts. He loved suited connectors, 2 cards of the same suit in sequential order. He raised to 120, 3 times the big blind, and looked over at Matt. If Matt realized that Johnny was tossing a signal out that he knew how he played, he didn't acknowledge it. Bill folded quickly, as did Jason. Matt tossed in the same amount of money and said, "Call." Butch looked at his cards for a while and finally said, "You bastards are making it too expensive for a guy who can't get a face card to save his life. You're ruining my life!" Doug looked at his cards and started counting his chips. Johnny watched as he counted up what was in the pot and then said, "I matched the pot. Raised to 300. Johnny frowned. It was almost 30% of his stack on just a suited connector. He looked at Doug, who was leaning forward in his chair, trying to look away from all of them. It was a sign that he had good cards, but Johnny knew that he'd be able to chase the kid out of a pot if he needed to. The pot odds weren't good, but he wanted to see what Matt would do with the kid making such a big overbet. When someone raised that much, it meant one of two things. He had nothing and was trying to protect the money he'd already thrown in for the blind, or he had a good hand and wasn't experienced enough to slow play it. Either way, Johnny looked at the kid and noticed that his hands were shaking slightly. Most people would see that as a sign that the kid was weak, but he knew better. He knew the kid was shaking from adrenaline racing through his system. He knew that the kid tended to act too fast when he had a good hand, and he often overbet the strength of his hand. "I called," Johnny said, and watched the kid for a reaction. He got one. The kid let a hint of a smile cross his face, and Johnny knew that the kid either had a strong pair or had an ace with a big kicker. "I call too," Matt said, counting out the chips and placing them in front of him. The kid swept them all in the center of the table and dealt up the cards. They came up as the ace and 5 of hearts and the jack of spades. The kid's hand shook a little more after he dealt the ace, and Johnny put him on an ace with a high kicker. Matt was motionless as if he were made of stone. Doug, the kid, was the last act. Everyone around the table tapped to him, and he tapped the table a little too hard, causing some of his chips to fall over. The kid was so excited he could barely contain himself, and he was waiting for someone to bet into him so he could come over the top. Johnny looked at the cards and then looked at Doug's stack. It would be enough for him to hit the 2,000 goal, but he was only 4 cards to the flush. With the kid holding a pair of aces, there wouldn't be a way to chase him out of the pot. Johnny was hoping to get a free look at 4th Street, and maybe, if he were lucky, he could catch a flush. He set one card aside, turned up the next card, the 2 of hearts. His strategy at work, he'd caught the flush. He was first to act and tapped the table, emotionless. He watched as Matt grabbed a stack of chips and put them in front of him. "Raised to 200, he said. It was a small bet after they had all had to put in 300 to see the flop, and a bit over $900 in the pot. Johnny figured he'd gotten a small piece of it and was just putting out a bet to see if anyone else had gotten anything. That was strange to him. Matt seemed like a really good player, and he hadn't realized Doug was doing everything but holding up a sign that says, "I have aces! Please bet!" Doug did bet. He shoved all his chips in front of him and said, "I'm all in." "Holy shit," Butch said. "We got our first all-in bet of the night." Doug stood up and walked away from the table, and Butch stood up as if he was the one who'd got all in. Johnny decided to make the kid sweat and started counting his chips, slowly, watching for a reaction from Matt. Matt was a big stack at the table. He was sitting there, unmoving. "I'm going to raise," Johnny said, slight smile on his face, "to a grand." "What the hell?" Doug said, coming back to the table. "He wants me to decide if I want to be in a side pot with him," Matt said quietly. "Or he wants to make it a bit more expensive for me to try and knock you out. It's a good strategy, since it makes me decide if my hand is the best at the table, or just good enough to beat yours, and maybe I'll catch something on the river." It was the most Johnny'd heard him say all night, and it was dead on. Matt looked at his cards and then tossed them in the muck. Johnny pulled back the amount he had over Doug's all-in bet and pushed the matching chips in the middle of the table. Doug came back to the table, turned up his cards, and said, "Bad choice, man." He showed an ace of spades and a jack of diamonds. 2 pair, and the people at the table chuckled a bit. "I'd have to agree with that," Johnny said, and then turned up his cards and showed the flush. "Son of a bitch," Butch said as Doug sat down, all the wind out of his sails. "Nice hand," Matt said, smiling a bit, showing more emotion than he had all night. The only way Johnny could lose is if Doug was able to get a full house. There was a chance, but it was slim. Doug burned a card and turned up the final card. Butch looked at it and said, "King of clubs on the river, and the winner of the hand is first hand Finch." Johnny smiled and the kid said, "Damn it, I finally got a killer hand," and Johnny fought the urge to tell him you never go in big with two pair when there are three cards of the same suit on the board, but decided just to keep his mouth shut and rake in the chips. Okay, we got a player knocked out. Let's take a break, Bill said. Everyone got up from the table but Doug, who sat there staring at the cards, not saying anything. He ran his fingers through his hair, and Johnny felt bad for him. He'd been in that spot before, but with a difference. He was knocked out by someone who didn't know shit about poker, and he had hoped that he had knew enough about poker that the kid would take it as a lesson and not a fluke. People refreshed their drinks, got bowls of chips, and went to the bathroom, but the kid just sat there staring at his cards. When everyone wandered back to the table, Butch sat next to the kid and put his arm around him. It sucks, doesn't it? He said quietly. Yeah, I was so sure I had the best hand. I planned to go all in right after someone bet, no matter what, Doug said. That's your problem, Butch said. You quit paying attention after you hit your two pair. You've got to pay attention, especially when people are playing for this amount of money. I mean, you put in a bet the size of a car payment, and the other two guys didn't flinch. It's usually a sign that you need to think long and hard about what you have. Yeah, kid, Bill said. Poker's not nice, and it ain't pretty. You've got to watch your ass. And even if you do all the right stuff, you could get your ass kicked. Just asshole first hand here. At that, everybody but Doug and Johnny laughed. Doug didn't laugh because he was still upset about the loss. Johnny didn't laugh because he looked across the table at the kid and saw himself. He saw his three kings shrink up against a four of a kind, and how it just didn't make sense to him. He looked down at his stack, which he'd sorted carefully while everyone else was getting drinks and chips, saw he had 100 more than he needed for Don to be able to move to Minneapolis. If he played tight and didn't make any stupid mistakes, he could sit on this amount of money, and she could still get her dream job. Maybe he could work some sort of factory job up in the Quad Cities until he saved enough money to move and be up there in a few months. Or he could just go all in with his poker playing and live off of it, saving up money for himself to move. Inwardly he sighed, not wanting to give everything away at the poker table, since he knew at least Matt could use it against him. He looked over at Doug, who was broke and about to go home. He thought about how it would kill Dawn if she had to stay here. If she had to settle for a crappy job at a nursing home, not connected to her field, and waiting for something else to come along. Something that would be a decent substitute for her dream. I don't have a right to push my game any further, he thought to himself. I'm not a good enough player. I can't make the right call when everything is on the line. He resolved to simply play tight and see if he could keep the money he had. Looking at the clock, he saw it was almost midnight. He'd played before where he just had to keep the blinds and antes from draining his hand and resolved only to play pat hands so as not to jeopardize what he had. The game restarted. Doug sat at the bar for the next hour or so, watching as they continued to play. With one player out, Jason stepped up his game a bit and began to get more aggressive. No one else changed their style, and with Johnny playing as tight as a grandmother playing for pennies, he kept even with what he had. Jason's stack continued to grow at the expense of Bill and Butch, while Matt kept back and didn't challenge anyone. He tightened up just like Johnny had tightened up, but he still had a commanding chip lead. Every once in a while, he'd bully the other players out of a pot by calling all in and forcing them to decide if they wanted it to be their last hand of the night. Every time, they chose to lay down their hands. A little after 1 in the morning, Johnny was zoning out. He wasn't paying attention to the hand since he'd already dropped out when he heard Butch say, "Screw it, I'm all in!" Johnny looked at the board and saw that they were on the turn, the fourth card, and what was showing was a king, 3 and 5 of spades, and a 10 of diamonds. From the cards on the table, he could tell that Butch, Bill, and Matt were all still in, and the bet was up to Bill. Bill looked at his cards and winced in pain as he tossed them into the muck. Matt, on the other hand, was counting his chips. Stacks in front of him were imposing. From the look on Butch's stack, calling was almost a no-brainer. Still, he was taking his time. He'd wished he'd been paying attention through the hand so he could tell if Butch was trying to double up with a strong hand, or if it was a desperation play after having bet too much at a hand that he should have dropped. From the look on his face, Johnny could tell he had a strong hand, but he didn't know if it was strong enough. "I call," Matt said, turning up an ace of spades and a 10 of clubs. "I'm still alive," Butch shouted as he turned up a pair of kings, meaning he had 3 of a kind. "I had to call," Matt said. "I was getting 5 to 1 on my money. I'll catch a flush about 20% of the time." Johnny nodded in agreement and watched as Jason turned up the next card. It was a 7 of spades, and everyone at the table but Matt moaned in disappointment. Butch sat down and said, "Damn, my one chance to get back in it. I think first hand has it right. Pocket kings will kill ya." "I've been dropping them all night," Johnny said, allowing himself to smile over it. I lost more money on big pocket pears than I would ever want to admit, Matt said, taking in the pot. I don't like them that much, unless it's to drive other people out of the pot. I'd rather limp in with a small pear and try to catch three of a kind. Let's have a break. 10 minutes sounds good, Bill said, and everyone agreed. Doug had fallen asleep on the couch over in the dark, and Butch came over and tapped him on the foot to wake him up. Got room in here in the loser's lounge? They got you too, Doug said groggily. Nah. I got me, Butch replied, plopping down on the couch next to him. I went all in when there were three spades on the board. I should have known there'd be a flush out there, but I'm pretty damn stupid at times. Not as dumb as I was, Doug said, still upset over being knocked out first. Hey, kid, don't worry about it, Butch said. We all knew you were dead money. He laughed, but Doug sat there and fumed a bit before Butch said, You know, if you can't take a ribbing, you shouldn't be playing the game. Stick to the dollar home games and the online stuff. I lost a little over $1,000 tonight. 2 weeks ago, up in Chicago, I walked out about $700 richer. The only difference was that I had more fun here and the booze was better. The money will balance out over time. Johnny listened as he mixed lemonade and Diet Cola and stretched his legs. Butch was a decent enough player so that things would balance out for him. Doug wasn't. He probably should not have shown up. Butch was right. He was dead money. He looked at his stack and then over at Matt's, which was now probably around $4,000. He still had a bit over $2,000, enough to send Dawn up north for her job. Matt and Bill came down from going upstairs to the bathroom, and Matt said, Two down, and it's only 1:30. Looks like we might be able to make it an early night. Jason brought over a bowl of popcorn and sat it on the small table next to his seat. I don't know. Bill and Firsthand are playing so tight it'll take a crowbar to get their money out of them. It's early yet, Bill said, grabbing a bottle of beer and sitting down. I have to pace myself. Besides, you don't shift gears until the table gets smaller. Oh, look, the table got smaller. You gonna buy back in, Butch? Matt asked as he sat down and started shuffling. Nah, he shouted from the couch. I learned my lesson tonight. Besides, now I can really start drinking. You gonna say anything? Bill said, looking at Johnny. Now I'll let you guys get in all your trash talk now, Johnny said, sitting down with his drink. Cards were dealt and play began again. The blinds were raised to $50 and $100 with a $10 ante. That means that Johnny had to rake in at least $160 every time the hand went around to keep up. With four players, he could play a little less tight, but he still only continued to play the big hands. Over the next hour, Bill started losing, and his money flowed across the table to Jason and Matt, but mostly to Jason, who'd opened up his game and was playing smart, aggressive poker. He got caught in a couple of bluffs, but for the most part, he took control of the table and changed the game to where more flops were being dealt. Bill continued to stay in for almost every flop and ended up throwing his cards away on 4th Street, which meant he was throwing more of his money away. As the night went on, he became the short stack, having the fewest chips at the table. Johnny was up another couple of $100, but he wasn't risking anything, only staying in to see a flop if he had a pair or an ace with a strong kicker, and he took down most of the pots he was involved in. At around 3 in the morning, Bill was down to just enough money for 3 more times around the table. Johnny was on the big blind and had to throw in $100 before even getting his cards. That meant he was the last to act. Bill dealt the cards and tossing them smoothly across the felt. Matt was first to get his and looked at them quickly. Raised to 300, he said, continuing his habit of coming in for 3 times the big blind and making it so Johnny had no idea the strength of his hand. Bill quickly folded and Jason stayed in the pot calling the bet. Johnny looked at his cards quickly and saw a pair of kings, diamond and spade. His face didn't show a single thing, but in his mind he withered. It was a strong hand, the second strongest starting hand in Texas Hold'em. All he could think about was how it had been used to hammer him. The tournament. The game a couple of weeks before. He'd even seen the kid go down with it earlier in that game. The kid who'd saved for a year to get in the high roller game, only to be the first one knocked out. Kid who was sitting on the couch listening to Butch tell poker stories, wondering what the nicest way to excuse himself and go home would be. The smart thing to do would be to raise, see what the other players had. Jason might be scared out of the pot since he had just called, meaning his hand was strong but not amazingly strong. He had no idea what to think of Matt's hand, and to be honest, coming back in for a raise would be a good way to tell if he had a good hand or was just trying to grab the antes and blinds. Johnny looked at his stack. He had a little more than $2,400. He should raise to the size of the pot. However, if he did that, he'd go under 2,000 and not have enough money for Dawn to move. Sure, if he kept playing tight, there wouldn't be enough money for him to move as well. But he'd already blown it so many times, did he have a right to risk Dawn's future? He'd already given up the money from James, money that could have made it easier on the two of them. The odds that money would have been traced to him were small, but he'd given it up anyway. He wanted to make the money legally, at least without having to deal with drug money or stolen money. And now? Now he had to decide. "I call," he said. The poker side of his brain was pissed off, but the practical side was happy that he'd played it safe. Bill moved his chips into the middle and dealt the flop. Ace of diamonds, nine of clubs, and ten of spades. Johnny relaxed a bit. The chance of someone getting a flush was now tiny, so his kings were pretty strong. However, with an ace on the board, it was still very possible that one of the other players had stayed with an ace and a big kicker and was now ahead of him. Johnny was the first act, and he rapped the table, checking. Matt also checked, which surprised Johnny. He must not have had an ace, since he would have wanted to protect the ace with three players in. Jason said, "I'll bet 100 and moved his chips in. It was a small bet, smaller than the previous bets had been, which is strange. It was as if Jason wanted Matt to call. But if he had a hand that was worth raising with, wouldn't he have raised for at least a fourth of what was in the pot? The others called quickly, and Johnny did as well, thinking that he still had the best hand, but not wanting to drive anyone out of the pot, since a person with a marginal hand would drop it after a raise and a re-raise. The dealer laid the fourth card on the table. It was the seven of spades, and Johnny saw out of the corner of his eye Jason quickly checked his cards. It was done in such a way not to be noticeable, but there it was. Jason didn't move his chips, didn't betray anything on his face, but it was odd that he would check his cards the second the fourth card was laid on the table. People checked around to Jason, who put in $400 and said, "I raise," as he was moving the money in. It was an obvious power play meant to show that the card had helped him, but Johnny didn't pay any attention to the bet. He was running through how Jason had bet and trying to figure out what the card check had meant. Jason simply called before the flop, and he was in the big blind, so he already had $200 in the pot, meaning he didn't have to put in any money to keep playing. Then he bet the minimum on the flop, meaning he had a piece of it, but not enough to make a big move, unless he was trying to trap the others into betting larger amounts. Johnny dismissed the idea that his first bet had been a trap, simply because Jason wasn't a good enough player that he would have checked and called any other bet if it were a trap, and in order not to draw attention to what he was doing. He obviously bet to see if anyone was in on a marginal hand, and if any bet would have chased him out. Now he was raising his bet, enough to make people think about staying, but not so much that it would scare people off. He looked at the cards again. Ace, 10, 9, and 7, three different suits. It all came to him as he watched the table. Jason checked his cards to make sure he had a straight. He'd bet on the flop to try and drive people out because he was four to the straight. When the seven came on the board, he wanted to check and make sure he hadn't misread his cards. Jason had to have the best possible hand, and his tell was that he would check his cards when he had a great hand, reassuring himself that he was right. Johnny had a pair of kings, but it would be worthless against the straight. If he was right, he would simply be tossing money across the table at Jason. He looked over at Jason, who was stone-faced and staring right at the bar, as if he wanted to drop out of the hand and get a drink. Since he knew that Jason wanted a call or a raise, his acting job was completely transparent. Johnny looked at his pair of kings again and sighed. Once again, a pair of kings, and once again, they wouldn't be enough for him to win a pot. He tossed them to the dealer and shoved the chips he'd already bet in the middle of the table. The other players quickly called. Johnny didn't look at the final card being dealt, and he kept watching Jason to see how he would react. Jason paid no attention to the final card either, betting $800 quickly. Johnny looked at the card on the table, Queen of Diamonds making a flush impossible and increasing the strength of Jason's straight if he was right. Of course, if he was wrong, the money in the middle would have been his, and he would have had more than enough to get him and Dawn to Minneapolis. Matt looked at his cards for a minute and then called, saying, "I don't know why you want to keep betting into me, but I'm happy to take your money." Jason shrugged and waited for Matt to turn up his cards. "I had a pair," Matt said, "tens," and he showed a king and a ten. Jason didn't say anything, but smoothly turned his cards over, a jack and an eight, both diamonds. Matt looked at the cards and said, "Shit, I didn't even think of that." Johnny smiled, knowing he'd just gotten a huge leg up on Jason, and all it cost him was $500. A bargain if he was able to use it to his advantage. The next one to drop was Bill, who went all in when he only had enough for one more round, had an ace and jack of spades, but he ran up against Matt with a pair of eights. When Bill didn't get anything to help his hand, he was out as well. It was down to Johnny, Matt, and Jason, and Matt was the short stack. Because of Bill busting out, the blinds were raised to 100 and 200 with a $50 ante. Matt only had enough for five times around the table and started playing very tight poker, only betting when he had a big pair. Jason continued to play aggressively, but as Johnny watched him, his tell became so apparent that he knew the strength of Jason's hands as much as his own. Any time a card came on the table that helped him, he would check his down cards immediately, sometimes checking to see if someone was watching him, but mostly doing it so fast that Matt was still looking at the cards on the table and figuring out if they helped his hand or not. After a half hour, Matt made a stand with a pair of jacks, and Johnny called him with a suited ace-king. When an ace came on the flop, Matt said, "Damn it, I haven't got shit all night." Johnny shook his head and waited as the dealer turned up the final two cards, neither of which changed the outcome of the hand. And with that, Matt was finally out. "We're heads up," Butch yelled as the other players came over to look, turning off the TV and putting down their drinks. Johnny and Jason stood up, stretching and getting a good look at the other players' chip stack. Bill had been acting as dealer, and he said, "Let's take a 10-minute break, and then we'll be playing heads up. Looks to me like Jason has about a 2-to-1 advantage over Johnny." "Damn right," Jason said. "You want to call it a night?" Johnny thought about it the same way he thought about a poker hand. He had a little over $2,000 and had doubled his money. He had done what he needed to do to pay for the move for Dawn herself. But across the table was another $5,000, enough to pay for both of them to move and have money so they didn't have to worry about paying bills for a couple of months. If he agreed to continue to play, it would be an all-or-nothing proposition. Before he could think it out much further, he said, "I'm in." "Gentlemen, we have a game," Butch said. "I need a 15-minute break," Jason said, stretching his arms to the low ceiling. Johnny agreed and went upstairs. The upper floor of the house was quiet and dark, but he was able to see well enough to get out the back door and go outside. The outside was crisp for a summer night, and the moon had already set for the evening. It was dark and still. Johnny thought for a minute if he was a smoker, he'd have a better excuse for going outside. He sat down on one of the steps leading down from the porch and stared off in the distance. The land was flat, and only patches of trees where they had been used for border between corn and bean fields. There were a few blue lights signifying farmhouses dotted in the distance, but for the most part all he saw were fields that were a couple of months away from being harvested. Usually this meant going back to school, but not now. School was done, and people were moving on with their lives, getting jobs that adults had. He laughed to himself, a dry, bitter laugh that he would have used his math skills in class instead of at the poker table. Maybe he'd be the one who had a big job offer with some company that would be big enough to pay them to move. "You all right?" he heard behind him. Quick turn of his head and he saw Butch standing there, a cold bottle of beer in his hand, leaning up against the side of the house by the door. "Yeah," Johnny said, "just getting some air. It's getting pretty stuffy down there." "I hear you," Butch said, taking a swig from the bottle. "Maybe it's a good idea to get out here and clear your head. Sometimes people don't think straight when it gets hot. And Jason's getting pretty good at taking people for a ride." "Meaning?" "Not much," Butch said. "You're a hell of a poker player, but he's a better bullshitter. And he's good at making good poker players hand over their money." Johnny thought about it a minute and said, "So you think I ought to go in and say I'm done for the night?" "I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you should think about it a bit more. I've seen when you get that poker genius look in your eyes when he's playing you. Most of the time he plays games like guts or baseball where it's more about luck than poker. We end up spending the night giving our money to him." "I ever tell you about the time he talked David into playing blind guts?" Butch asked. When Johnny shook his head, Butch started into the story. "We're playing our normal house games, dealer's choice, and his favorite game was guts. Now, guts is where you're dealt three cards, and you can either stand or fold. If you stay in and lose, you have to match a pot. And the only way the game ends is if only one person stays in, they beat a dummy hand, so the pots can get really big. He was joking around and said he could do just as well if he didn't even look at his cards. And when David said he was full of shit, he dealt blind guts. Everyone got three cards dealt face down. They had to decide if they were in or out before they got to look at their cards. I paid my ante and folded every hand, but he kept it David until that guy was staying on almost every hand. It got pretty ugly since the pot started at $3 from every player, and on the last hand, David had to match a $300 pot. The next hand, David dropped. I dropped, and that left him. He beat the dealer, and he picked up all of David's money." "Jesus," Johnny said. "I don't think there's a way you could ever remotely call that poker." "Exactly," Butch said. "You play poker. Jason gambles and he plays people." He finished his beer and tossed the empty bottle in the garbage can next to the door. It landed with a louder-than-expected crash, and Butch said, "Hope that didn't wake anybody up." "If they didn't wake up when we were playing Ace of Spades by Motorhead in the basement, I'm sure a beer bottle won't wake them up." "You're probably right. I'm heading back in. Should I tell them you'll be down in a couple of minutes?" "Yeah," Johnny said. "I want another five or so before I head in." No problem, Butch said as he went back in the house. Johnny thought about what Butch had said, and he knew he was right. It wasn't just Jason, or even when he played poker. It was every time he was in conflict with another person, he saw it as a battle of logic. When it came to James's stealing, he thought of it as a matter of numbers, and the loss outweighed the gain, rather than looking at who James was and why he would do that sort of self-destructive behavior. Even when it came to dealing with Dawn, he always boiled it down to numbers. He hadn't thought to think about who she was as a person through this whole thing, just about the numbers and how much it would cost for them to move. He knew that she loved him. He knew that the decision was hard for her. In the end, it wasn't just about numbers. It was about her dream and what she wanted to do with her life. She wanted to know if he was going to be part of it, and this whole move was part of that, even if she didn't know it. In poker, people have tells that let other people know the strength of their hand, but they don't always know they're doing them. If they did, they'd stop them. He was sure that if Jason knew that he always checked his cards when he was sure he'd made his hand, he would quit doing it. Johnny now knew that last month, Dawn had been giving him a tell as well. She wanted to know if he was ready to grow up. Her having to move for a job was a tell. It wasn't a bluff. It wasn't part of a game. He doubted she even knew it, but now that he did, he could make his decision. He would be moving out of his comfort zone and taking on real responsibilities. He stood up and took a last look at the sky. There were hints that the sun was starting to come up with a light glow on the eastern horizon. It was probably close to 4:30 in the morning, and the game could go in for 10 minutes or another 5 hours. But everything was riding on it now. He just had to learn if he could judge people instead of just doing the math. Chapter 26. They had been heads up for an hour and very little change in the chip count. Johnny had been playing tight, and Jason was playing aggressive, trying to end things quickly. But Johnny was watching for his tell and would quickly drop if he checked his cards a beat or two after a new card was turned face up. It hadn't helped that Johnny hadn't been dealt any decent hands that he could use. He was dealt a pair of aces early, but Jason dropped quickly when an ace hit the board and Johnny checked after betting before the flop. Jason had even said, "Oh, come on, an ace on the flop and you check? You should just tell me you have an ace in your hand." To which Johnny just smiled and Paulette gathered the meager amount of chips that were in the pot. "Blinds are now 200 and 400 and have gone up since we've been playing for about an hour now," Butch said, dealing the cards. Johnny checked his hands on 8 and a 5 off suit. Jason was first act, checked his own cards, and called the big blind, putting another 4 chips in to match Johnny's 8 $50 chips. Johnny wrapped the table, signifying he wasn't going to raise, and Butch dealt the flop. It came 2 fives and a 9, all different suits. Johnny had 3 of a kind and watched as Jason checked his hand quickly as soon as the cards hit, meaning he had a piece of it. Johnny quickly did the math in his head, and with 3 cards of 3 different suits so far apart, there wasn't a chance of a straight or a flush. Jason bet 400, the minimum. Johnny figured he must have a 9 in his hand and was betting based on having top pair. He wanted to use the opportunity to pull as many chips out of him as possible, so he called, tossing his chips in with confidence. He knew that a gambler like Jason would go on the principle that weak is strong and strong is weak. So to cover up a strong hand, he had to make him bet as if he had good cards, but not to bet too much so that Jason would think his hand was unbeatable. The next card was a 4, and Jason bet again, this time 500, a little above the minimum bet. He didn't check his cards, so Johnny knew that the card didn't help his hand. Johnny decided to put a little pressure on, so he raised for the amount of Jason's bet. Jason quickly tossed in the extra $500 in chips. Johnny was still confident in his hand, and having 3 of a kind meant that he was favored over a random hand by a little over 75%. He had put Jason on a pair of 9s, but was still nervous about the next card. He had less than half of his chips in the pot. He had a little less than half of his chips in this hand. Butch dealt the final card on the table, and it was a 9. Johnny didn't even have to see Jason look at his card surreptitiously to know he was beat. He had a full house sitting on the board, but he knew that if Jason had a 9 in his hand, he had a higher full house. Jason checked his hand and waited. Johnny saw that he was leaning back in his seat, fingering his chips, waiting for him to make a bet. Johnny checked, and Jason couldn't turn over his cards fast enough to show a pair of 9s. 4 of a kind, Butch said, suitably impressed. Johnny mucked his cards face down, not even wanting to show the full house. "That's a hard hand to walk away from," Butch said, looking at Johnny as he did. Butch was right. He had a full house, one of the best hands in poker. He'd had 3 of a kind on the flop, and just going by the math, he should have pushed hard. He smiled and said, "Yeah, if I'm going to get knocked out, that would have been the hand to do me in." Johnny counted his chips and saw he had a little over $1,000, enough for four more hands with the blinds the way they were structured. He was a small blind and looked at his cards as they were dealt. He saw an ace and a six of hearts and immediately said, "All in." Jason looked at Johnny's chip stack and said, "You got to go in with pretty much anything, so I call," without even looking at his cards. They turned their hands up, and Jason had an eight of diamonds and a two of spades. He looked at Johnny's cards and said, "Too bad, I was getting ready to go home." "Still got to deal the cards," Butch said, and he quickly dealt the flop, a king, a seven, and a three, each of different suits with no hearts. Johnny simply had to dodge an eight or a deuce in order to survive and double his chip stack to where he could have a bit of a buffer. Another three came on the turn, and Jason sat down and started counting out chips. Six came on the river, and Butch said, "Johnny wins with a pair of sixes and doubles up." "Looks like we're playing a while longer," he said, raking in the chips. Butch dealt quickly, and Johnny saw that everyone who had been involved in the game was sitting on their old chairs at the table. No one else was talking, just watching the game, knowing that it could be over on any hand. Johnny was the big blind. Jason looked at his cards and said, "I raise," moving in another 800 in chips, bringing the total bet to $1,000. Johnny checked his hand and saw a pair of fives. Heads up, any pair is a good pair, and while Jason had bet a substantial amount of money, it wasn't enough to put them all in. Just enough to try and scare him out. Johnny dropped a chip on his cards and looked across the table at Jason. Jason smiled and said, "And the poker genius is going to run the numbers. If he calls, he's pretty much committed if I make another bet, since he's only got a little over $2,000 in his stack. This will bring him down to around $1,000, and that gives him four hands to survive being blinded out. What will he do? What will he do?" And then he started laughing. Johnny kept looking at him, trying to find some sort of tell. He didn't speak. He didn't look away. He just kept staring. Jason then said, "If you drop, I'll show you what I have." "All in," Johnny immediately said, picking up on the slight shift in Jason's tone. To an outsider who knew the strong is weak and weak is strong would think that Jason was weak. But Johnny had been watching him since they'd gone heads up, and Jason got to talking when he had medium hands, and he tried to make them seem stronger than they really were. He didn't have a pair, which meant that he was on a drawing hand, good enough to bet with, but not a sure thing. Jason got a look of mock surprise on his face and looked at his cards again. He took a drink from the water bottle at his side and said, "What the hell?" and turned his cards up. An ace of clubs and a three of spades hit the table. Johnny turned up his pair of fives. The pot was close to $5,000, and if Johnny won, he'd be the chip leader. If he didn't, he'd be out. Butch quickly dealt the flop, and it came the eight of diamonds, the four, and the deuce of spades, none of which helped Jason's hand. The next card was the jack of spades, which didn't help him either. It made four spades for him, but the spade in his hand was the three of spades, and Johnny had the five of spades, meaning that if the final card was a spade, Johnny would have the higher flush. Butch said, "Here we go. Anyone want to put a side bet on this card?" "Turn it," Jason said, visibly irritated. The card was the six of hearts, meaning that Jason's pair of fives had held up, and he was now in the lead for the first time since they'd gone heads up. Playing the player, combined with playing the cards, had turned it around. The next hour was played conservatively by both players. When the blinds went up to 400 and 800, Johnny had a little over 4,000, and Jason had a little under the same amount. Butch shuffled the cards and said, "We said we'd end this game at 8 in the morning, which is about an hour away. So that was the last time we're raising the blinds. It's all down to the next hour." "Shuffle up and deal," the others said, laughing as they did. Of course they're laughing, Johnny thought. They're done and get to relax. The cards were dealt, and he was a small blind, so he was stacked first. He looked at his cards quickly and saw an ace, and didn't even bother to look at the other card before saying, "All in." Jason dropped quickly, having looked at his cards as they were dealt. Johnny watched as he shoved his cards back at Butch, trying not to show anger, but failing. His eyebrow raised slightly, and he grimaced as he pushed the cards away, and Johnny noted it. The cards were dealt again, and Jason was first to act, and called. Johnny didn't even look at his cards, but he kept his eyes on Jason and said, "All in," again. Jason looked down at his cards again, gave the same grimace, and shoved his cards back at the dealer as Johnny scooped the pot. It was that way for the next hour, Johnny powering past Jason if he showed any weakness at all, and not playing when Jason would push more chips into the pot. Jason, who was playing angry and paid more attention to his cards, seemed not to notice that Johnny rarely looked at his cards at all, but got a little more angry each time Johnny would call "all in" whenever he showed the slightest bit of hesitancy or weakness. By the time Butch called, "Half hour and we're all done," Johnny was a 2-to-1 chip leader and had a bit less than $7,000 worth of chips. Jason was flipping a chip across his knuckles and staring at the deck as Butch shuffled it, seething as he watched the cards. Johnny knew that Jason was on tilt, and while Jason was angry, cursing the cards, he didn't care what the cards were. He tossed out the math and was simply playing the player, knowing that Jason cared more about winning overall than winning a hand. So he would only go into a pot if he knew he had a commanding lead. Just like he'd played. Just like he'd lived his life. Things were different now. He'd given up on the old ways he'd played poker because he wanted to win for a different reason. As the cards were dealt, he thought about Dawn. She was right, and he'd been trying to deny it in his own mind. She was moving on, not away from him, but away from the sheltered, protected college life of just living day to day, and she was telling him, in her own scared, backhanded way, she wanted him to move on with her. It wasn't about the money, although that was a big part of it. It was about him being willing to give up on the life he'd knew for the chance at a better one. 2 weeks ago, he wasn't able to. Now, just like he had given up on his old way of playing for a chance at a better one, he was ready. It was crystal clear to him, and had been building all night. Cards came, and he capped his with a chip, waiting for Jason to act. Jason looked at his cards and betrayed no emotion, trying to clamp down on the anger that had been building over the last few hours. He counted out stacks of chips, and Johnny watched as he slowly separated out a large stack of his shrinking chips. Slowly, he pushed in a stack that was 3 times the big blind and pulled back the chips he'd put in the middle for the small blind. Johnny looked at his cards and tried to show no emotion. It was a pair of queens, one of the biggest hands he could have been dealt, and two-handed, it was a powerhouse. His first instinct was just to go all in and scoop up the bet that Jason had put in and keep on chipping away at his stack till he had to go all in or surrender everything on the blinds. He looked over at Jason, who stared at the deck, trying desperately to show no emotion. "I call," Johnny said, thinking that he would see how Jason played the flop and decide from there. If he lost, he'd still be in the chip lead. Even though there was a lot of money in the pot, it wasn't much in the way of strategy. The flop came, and the 3 cards on the table were a 7 and 8 of spades, as well as an ace of diamonds. Johnny noticed that once Jason had fallen behind, he wasn't speaking much. Not even announcing his bids most of the time, a marked change from the early part of the evening when Jason would provide commentary on most hands and egg people on when it was a big hand. Jason looked at his cards and Johnny immediately knew he'd picked up a piece of the hand. The problem was Johnny couldn't tell which piece he'd picked up. With the cards as there was an ace on the board, which he could have paired up with. With the 2 spades or 2 connected cards, he could be 4 to a flush or a straight. Johnny quickly went over how Jason had bet in the past. Some players would bet big if they had a possible straight or possible flush to try and get people to drop and protect their draw. But others would just try to get the next card free in order to make their hand. Jason was a guy who would bet to protect his hand, so Johnny figured that the only way Jason wouldn't bet was if he'd paired up his ace, or he had a low pair that he had hit, hoping to get Johnny to go all in. That was the bet he was looking for. Johnny was first to act and decided to put in the minimum possible, but to feel out what Jason's position was. Jason looked at the flop and then backed at his hand. Bingo. "Raise," Jason said simply, shoving a pile of chips. Johnny didn't even bother to wait. As soon as Jason's hand came off his chips, he said, "All in." "Damn it," Jason said quickly and went back to his hand. The others around the table had been losing interest over the last half hour, but with that outburst, they were jolted awake. Johnny didn't even look at Jason as he struggled to decide what to do. He looked at one of the small windows next to the ceiling of the basement, looking out at the dark clouds filling the sky. There were various shades of dark blue, threatening rain. He didn't look back, trying not to give any information as he waited for Jason to make his decision. Time stretched. Johnny felt just like standing up and shouting, "Put your money in the pot! It doesn't matter what you do, I've got you outplayed!" He didn't. Things had to happen in their own time. "You've been smacking me around all night," Jason said, and got a slight laugh out of Johnny, who thought the same thing until a couple of hours ago. "And you can't win if you don't go for a coin flip once in a while." He shoved all his chips in, and the basement erupted with everyone shouting at once. Johnny and Jason both stood up, and Johnny felt a wash of relief. It didn't much matter how the cards came up, because there wasn't much time for more play, so however this hand ended would probably be how the game ended. He snuck a glance at the clock at the bar and saw it was 7:45. Probably only time for two more hands if he lost this one. If he lost, he could still play tight and walk out with enough for the move. Because of how he'd played over the last 2 hours, all the pressure was off. Jason turned over his cards and showed a 9 and 10 of spades. 4 cards to a straight flush, Butch said. Nice call. Johnny turned over his queens, and Butch said, pair of queens. Johnny's in the lead, but it's a coin flip. Any spade, a 6, or a jack wins it for Jason. It's a hell of a lot of outs, Jason said. I haven't gotten any cards for the last 2 hours. I had to go for it. Johnny just nodded and waited silently. Butch put one card to the side and dealt a 2 of diamonds. No help for Jason, he said quietly, and the other strained to watch. Butch looked around the room, milking the drama. Last card, gentlemen. If it's not one of Jason's outs, this game is over. Johnny looked over at Jason, who had lost the anger in his face. Good luck, kid, he said. Johnny smiled and said, you too. Knowing that whoever said good luck at a poker table, they were basically saying, hope you screw up. Butch laid the next card aside and flipped the final card. River card. Dream card. Johnny couldn't look and just simply kept staring at Jason's face, since he knew that he'd be able to tell if he had won just by watching his reaction. Chapter 27. Johnny had moved almost everything in the apartment into the bedroom so that there was room to set up a card table. He checked the kitchen to make sure that all the snacks he bought were in bowls, even though he felt it was no problem at all with chips and pretzels being in the bags they came in. Then again, there were a lot of things he didn't quite understand about what Don called being a grown-up. He was making sure that there was a bowl of ice in the freezer when the front door opened. Are you decent? Came Don's voice. Of course not, he said. You said people would be here at 8, so I'm not even going to consult putting on pants for another hour. She came into the kitchen and tossed a grocery bag at him. He caught it, dropped it on the counter, and grabbed her in his arms. They kissed, and then she said, how did your day go? Oh, my God, he started. You have no idea how exciting accounting is. The place was invaded by terrorists, and all I had to fight them off was a wireless mouse. Thankfully, I was able to blind the leader with the mouse's laser, took his machine gun from him, and blew them all away. I accidentally shot and killed Drew, but I don't think anyone's caught on that it was me. No one will miss him anyway, because he feels the need to ask if it's hot enough for me whenever it gets above 80 degrees outside. I won't miss him, and I feel I could speak for everyone on this. And here I thought accounting was boring, she said. I just had 2 kids get into a fight because they couldn't figure out whose turn it was on the video game, and punching each other in the face was an easier way to solve the problem than talking about it. Boring stuff, Johnny said, and Don nodded. They kissed again, and Don slipped away to double-check on all the food. You think we have enough, she said, looking in the fridge at the cut veggies and various dips. I think we have enough food for every person we have met since we moved here, Johnny said, and everyone they knew, and so on, and so on, and so on. Laugh while you can, monkey boy, she teased, but it was your idea to have people over for our first anniversary of moving here. I wanted to spend a nice, quiet night talking you out of watching whatever poker show is on. Johnny smiled and opened up one of the cabinets. Inside was a long silver poker chip case. He laid it on the counter and opened it up. The heavy clay chips were nestled snugly inside, as well as 2 decks of cards and 5 dice. Don hugged him from behind and asked, have you ever figured out what the dice are for? I figure they are for when someone tries to run off with the chips, you could just throw the dice at their feet and hope they step on them and trip. Don kissed him on the side of the neck and went back to fussing over the food, making sure that there were disposable plates and cups ready for when people got there. She stopped and turned around, looking at him. He felt her eyes on him and realized he'd pulled 3 chips from the set and was shuffling in his hand absentmindedly. What? He asked. Are you ever going to tell me if you won that night? Which night? He said, stacking 10 chips on the counter in 2 piles and shuffling them together into 1. The night aliens captured you and installed cable TV in your ass, she said. The tournament. The one where you got the money for us to move here. Doesn't matter, he said. I had enough for us to move here and get this wonderfully tiny apartment, whether I won or lost, so it doesn't matter. Be that way, she said, knowing that he hadn't even talked about poker for the first 6 months after they'd moved here and had just started watching poker on TV again a few weeks ago. She looked at him shuffling the chips and asked, do you miss it? Miss what? She shrugged. You know, living in the house, playing poker all the time, wanting to be a big poker star. He carefully put the chips down and said, yeah, I can't lie. It was fun. It was horrible what happened to James. I thought for sure that Kyle and Rob would call more often. But I also know that if I would have stayed there, I'd still be looking for a job, hustling people to make rent, and missing you. In fact, he said, I think the idea of missing you is what really pushed me to change my game. And then give it up, she said quietly. No, he corrected her. I haven't given it up. I just haven't played since we moved here. The job has been pretty hard, especially since I blew off most everything I was supposed to learn in college. She grinned at that, and Johnny thought of all the nights he'd spent reading through his college textbooks, many for the first time, teaching himself the stuff he was supposed to have learned in college. But you miss it, she said again. Why? He asked. Because I've been keeping a secret from you, she said. You know how I said I was repaying my student loan off quickly so we could get our credit rating up for a house? I lied. I've been putting that money aside in a savings account. He looked a bit confused, and then she went on. There's a little over $11,000 in it, enough for us to go to the poker tournament they're having down at the casino and spend the weekend there. Johnny was stunned. Before he could say anything, the doorbell rang. That'll be Mary and her husband, Don said. Before I let them in, are you interested? Johnny picked up the deck of aristocrat cards he had nestled in the poker set. He opened it up and said, Depends on how I do tonight. If I win, we're in. Don smiled and started off toward the door to let the first of the guests in. I'll take that as a yes. He shrugged and looked over at the pair of queens inside a custom frame that had been hanging on the wall since they'd moved there and smiled. Take it however you want. You told them I'm horrible at this game, right? The end. And that's the end. This novel was written for NaNoWriMo and then edited about 3 months later and then edited again as I was getting it ready for the novel cast. It looks like I'm going to be doing about 2 to 3 novels a year, and I'm going to continue on the bi-weekly. Hopefully there won't be any more breaks in the middle like there were in this one. I apologize for that. My personal life got a little out of control. It will not happen again. There's a lot going on in the Solitaire Rose Network. Tomorrow, I will be appearing at LionCon for my final convention for the foreseeable future. That is the big announcement I'm going to be making. But the reason for that is because I'm going to be ramping up the podcast. Solitaire Rose Radio, which has been kind of whenever I get it done, is going to be going bi-weekly. It will alternate with Novelcast. So 1 week you'll get Novelcast, 1 week you'll get Solitaire Rose Radio. They will go back and forth. Also, Joe and I will be starting a new podcast in about a month or so, and it will be where we go through runs of comics that we enjoy. The first one we will be doing from the omnibuses as they come out is Master of Kung Fu. We will be talking about the comic, we'll be talking about what was going on at the time, and talking about what was going on if and when we read it at the time. Or if this is one that we didn't read till it came in the omnibus. So we've got that. Crazy Comics and Stories continues to roll on. We're going to have some pretty fun guests over the next year or so. One of the things we're doing, we're changing it up a little. We're going to be having a special guest once a month dropping in. And our first guest in September will be Angel Medina, who's going to stop by and talk 70s comics and pro wrestling. And we're looking to switch things up. Don't want to do the same thing all the time. We're always looking to change things, always looking to keep it fresh and exciting without losing the stuff that you like. If you enjoy Novelcast, please tell your friends, retweet, share on Facebook, share on all your social media, let people know. Please give us reviews. Reviews on iTunes really help with the algorithm. Reviews over on Stitcher help as well. We really enjoy the fact that our listeners like what we do, and we'd like it if you shared it with more people. The next novel will be a novel called Do the Job. It is set in the world of professional wrestling in the late 80s, and it's a detective story. It's about a private detective who used to be a professional wrestler investigating the mysterious death of one of the people who worked in wrestling at the time. I hope you enjoy it. The novel after that will be the next in the zombie novel series, the After the Fall series. I've got 16 novels lined up ready to go. So if we do 3 a year and I keep writing 2 to 3 a year, I'll be doing this for the rest of all eternity. Again, I want to thank you for listening. We do ads here at the Solitaire Rose Network. Here they are. Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, And your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world. And remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right. Those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors. I want to thank you again, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with the next novel. Another fine podcast from Solitaire Rose Networks.
The end.